WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
People can and do experience a lot of issues with their health insurance coverage, from what gets covered to how much, to problems with pre-authorization, and so on and so on. But this one was a new one for us to learn about. Being denied health insurance coverage because the treatment is working. And this happens largely around mental health. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. A new investigation found that some insurance companies across the country, including right here in Illinois, stop paying for mental health treatment when patients start showing signs that it's working. Dua El-Deeb investigated this for ProPublica, and she joined us with details. Dua started off by telling us about the case of Geneva Moore, someone whose story she highlights in her investigation.
So last year, I was part of a team of reporters at ProPublica who decided to investigate mental health treatment in the United States. And we had heard so many complaints about insurance companies denying coverage. And, you know, I think it's important to pause here for a moment and kind of step back. We're not talking about people who don't have insurance. These are people who have insurance, who every month, you know, pay for their insurance with the promise that when they need treatment, it will be covered by their insurance company.
Right.
But what we found is time and again, that wasn't happening. And Geneva Moore was one of those people. She had reached out after her insurance company, Blue Cross Blue Shield, had denied coverage for her intensive outpatient program. Geneva is this smart, beautiful, bubbly, you know, veterinary technician mm-hmm. who loves animals. Her plant collection, like I walk into her room and I feel like I'm in a rainforest.
yeah.
But she's had struggles. And mm-hmm. so she sought help and she finally found a program where she felt like this is actually working and she was getting treatment at this program. And then after a few months, they denied her coverage.
Yeah. So you mentioned it was an intensive outpatient treatment. So her therapist had to scramble in order to prove why ongoing treatment was necessary. So tell us more about that.
Yeah. And so what happened in Geneva's case, her therapist knew she needed continued treatment. Geneva knew it. Director of nursing knew it. Everyone who had, you know, direct connections with Geneva knew that she needed it. So what happens in a lot of these cases when insurance denies coverage, you know, the facility can request a peer-to-peer call where they get on the phone with a doctor working for an insurance company and they basically have to plead their case. Mm-hmm. And in Geneva's case, you know, her therapist was really worried about what would happen if her coverage got cut off prematurely. So she spends 3 hours prepping for this call. She goes over all of her old notes, her suicide screenings, and she kind of writes out what, you know, what she's going to tell the doctor. You know, she's still suicidal. She has expressed a desire to stop harming herself, but she's still cutting herself regularly. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have coping skills. She doesn't have a support system. She really needs to be in this continued treatment. And what's interesting, you know, when we were talking to her, and it's something that we heard, my colleague Maya Miller and I are the ones who worked on the story.
Yeah.
And something we heard over and over is that, like, when they get on the phone with these insurance doctors, they have to speak quickly because they don't have a lot of time and they're really, really pleading their case. So she was like, I went through quickly. And I just, you know, she listed all these things off, hoping that was going to convince them, hoping it would be enough to to have them reverse their decision and let her stay in treatment longer. Yeah. But they said, you know, they denied the coverage and they would not.
Let's stick with these insurance company doctors for another moment here, because they're the ones who ultimately deny the claims, right? What ground are they standing on when they do that?
So these are doctors who are hired by the insurance companies. They're paid by the insurance companies. These are, you know, the insurance company is their boss. And so they wield extraordinary power. Their job is to determine whether or not treatment is medically necessary. And if they decide that they don't think it is medically necessary, then they can deny the continued coverage.
Interesting. And so you looked at instances where the patient's therapists were essentially arguing with these insurance companies and their doctors. So it just feels a little bit of like a hopeless situation, because when your medical provider can't convince your insurer, what's your recourse here?
It's a very good question. And I think a lot of people feel like they don't have a recourse. And some of them have providers who really fight hard. And one of the things that we heard from doctors and therapists is that they are stuck in the situation where they have to take time away from their patients to argue with insurance companies and convince them that their patients are making enough progress to stay in care, mm-hmm. but not too much progress that they no longer need care.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's just this constant cycle. And we heard over and over from doctors,
like, we want you to get better, but not all the way better.
Yeah, because they will cite progress as a reason to justify their denial. So they'll say, you have made progress, you are better, you have improved, and therefore we are not going to continue covering the level of care that you're at. So the higher level of care that you're at, the more expensive it typically is. So residential treatment or intensive outpatient treatment, these can be expensive. So in Geneva's case, they said, you know, we no longer, you have made progress.
Yes.
We no longer think that you are, you know, a danger to yourself or others. And so we're not going to pay for this level of coverage. We're going to step you down to just, you know, outpatient therapy, which is like what, you know, a lot of people, when they go see their therapist, that's the kind of, you know.
So from intensive outpatient therapy in Geneva's case to just a regular outpatient
yes.
therapy.
Yes.
Are there certain kinds of mental health treatment that are more likely to be denied?
Well, I think like the short answer is there shouldn't be. Like, we have a federal law on the books that is, the whole point of it is to ban discrimination between mental health and physical health treatment. Mm-hmm. And so it says, you know, insurers, they can't discriminate between these two types of treatment. But the reality is this happens a lot, where they will discriminate between mental health and physical health. And what we found in our reporting is that, you know, doctors who are treating a physical ailment can point to an MRI or an X-ray or blood test to justify to the insurer, like, why their patient needs this coverage. But in mental health, it can be more subjective and it can be more fluid. So in cases where a patient is starting to show slivers of progress, then an insurance company can use that against the patient. But what the doctors or the providers will tell them is, like, just because my patient is better today doesn't mean that they will be better tomorrow,
right,
or next week.
There is such thing as a regressive, right?
Yes, yes. And so, it's so fluid.
And
so,
you mentioned there's slivers of progress. How are they measuring progress?
So what the insurance companies will tell you is that they have a set of guidelines that they use, essentially checklists that allow them to compare the patient's symptoms with this list of items that will show them, you know, whether or not the patient has made sufficient progress. The problem with those guidelines and what, you know, a lot of the criticism around them, it's twofold. One, what we kept hearing is that these guidelines are proprietary. They are often developed by for-profit companies. And sometimes insurance companies will use their own guidelines, so they get to define what progress is.
Do you get to see these guidelines as a patient?
Sometimes you can request them. But I've heard of patients who have spent a lot of time asking for those guidelines and then they don't receive them.
Interesting.
And then the other problem that we heard with the guidelines is that they shortcut actual recovery so that they will, you know, stabilize the patient that's, you know, in this immediate crisis. But like beyond that, they don't actually help them recover, get to recovery.
Now, in Geneva's case, so she was denied the treatment that she needed. She then ended up checking herself into an emergency room. She entered this, as you describe it, downward spiral that ended up being way more costly than the original treatment that the insurance company denied in the first place. So this was by a difference of tens of thousands, to be clear. It seems like everyone lost in this situation. Would you agree?
Yeah, I don't know who could come out feeling like a winner.
Yeah, and what do the insurance companies say about that and the consequences of denying these kinds of claims?
So the insurance companies say that the reason that they do this is because they want to ensure that each patient gets the proper level of care for their specific needs. So they don't want somebody who's very sick to be in a lower level of care or somebody who's not very sick to be in a higher level of care. But when you're arguing with a patient's provider, the one who's, you know, on the ground with them and seeing how they're, you know, progressing every single day, mm-hmm. it's hard to know how they can make that decision. And I think it's important to note that these doctors are operating in a system that is designed by the insurance company. And even the judges who have found that these insurance companies have violated federal law have, you know, are also working within this legal system. So the law that governs this, ERISA, doesn't allow for punitive damages. So, you know, one of the federal judges we spoke to is like, you know, so what's the deterrent there? Because, you know, at the end of the day, even if they have to pay out 10 claims, it's a thousand that they don't have to pay out.
Yeah. So is this happening across insurance companies, or are there some major offenders here?
So we've found it across insurance companies.
Okay. So everybody's doing this?
Yes. Big, small.
And do we have a sense of how often it's happening and where?
So the data around insurance companies, I mean, it's just a black hole. None of that is really publicly available. You know, we ask questions, they don't answer. And so what we've had to do is really read, you know, thousands of pages of court records, interview, you know, dozens of lawyers and doctors and patients. And, you know, the best that we're able to come up with is happens a lot, but we don't have a specific number. And part of the reason, in addition to just, you know, the black hole of insurance data, is in the vast majority of cases, people don't appeal their denials. Mm. So there was one study that found that less than 1% of people whose coverage was denied end up appealing. And of that less than 1%, a much smaller, you know, percentage of people are actually able to then file a lawsuit that will go to court and end in a judgment.
As a whole, I think we're just so used to the no. And so once you get the no, you think, well, that's it. I don't have any other options. So this practice, though, has been challenged in court.
Yes, it has been challenged. And judges, federal judges, have found that insurance companies violated the law. They have criticized the doctors that work for these insurance companies for doing selective readings of, you know, the medical evidence, for shutting their eyes to medical evidence that was presented, for using nearly identical or verbatim language in their denial letters, even though these are supposed to be independent reviews. And, you know, part of the reasons insurance companies will say, oh, well, we had three different doctors look at it, because they'll say, oh, okay, so it's an independent review. But what judges have found is that a lot of it is actually just boilerplate language that then they use from letter to letter.
In our discussion earlier about these guidelines, Illinois is one of 9 states that has laws requiring insurers to use guidelines that align with leading standards of mental health care. What does that actually look like in practice, Dua?
So those guidelines that we were talking about earlier, the ones that are proprietary, the ones that allow insurance companies to really determine, you know, their definition of progress, What these states like Illinois have done is saying that we're going to take that out of the hands of insurers and we are going to put it in the hands of nonprofit organizations. So American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association, these nonprofit organizations who experts would argue do not have the same conflict of interest that an insurance company has when it's determining, you know, how or what it will cover.
Yeah. Well, we talked about what's happening and the challenges in court. Anything else being done to contest this outside of the courtroom, Dua?
I'm at a loss for words there, because it's really, I think, an uphill battle for patients, their families.
So I feel like not enough people know their rights in this instance.
And I think a lot of people feel like it's a David, versus Goliath battle. Like, how are they going to go up against some of the largest health insurers in the country when you're just one little person?
Yeah.
So there are some advocacy groups, there are some nonprofits. Illinois, we have a group, Cover My Mental Health, where they are trying to help families fight back. And so they will tell them, if you get a denial letter that says it is no longer medically necessary, this is how you can try to argue that. And so there is this effort where they're trying to help people who really feel helpless. I think in Geneva's case, she didn't have the money to file a lawsuit. She didn't even know that was an option.
Right.
And so she's trying as best as she can. But again, the majority of people are not able to do that.
Right. Well, we'll leave it there for now. That's Dua El-Deeb, who's a reporter for ProPublica Illinois. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Ari Mejia. Every episode of the Reset Podcast hopes to invite you into conversations that spark curiosity and keep you in the know. And if you like what you're hearing, we'll subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk again later today.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.